Hello, everybody. This is the Power Shift Automotive Podcast, a podcast centered around the automotive culture of maintaining, modifying, and pretty much anything else related to automobiles. There may be instances of strong language, and this podcast is intended for a mature audience. That being said, it's good to be back, guys. This is Matthew, and...
And I'm Nathan.
So we've taken a bit of a hiatus. What we intend to do is we intend to do a 2018 recap just to kind of talk about some of the things that led to the hiatus, some of the things that have happened with our vehicles. And I guess right away, I'll say we took a little bit of a hiatus because of me, so you can blame me. It's all good. And if you do hear some background noise, we do have the dogs running around, and it's quite hilarious. You can laugh it off with us. But I had relocated to the Dayton area for a new job, and obviously that didn't quite make our schedules cohesive. So we're working at getting back into it and decided we're just going to jump right back into it. I'm always here on weekends, so no reason we can't do this thing again. And I guess with that out of the way... Nathan, what happened to the Challenger?
Oh, actually got traded in. it was something that I didn't really want to do. And I contemplated it for quite a while, but just the way my lifestyle is going right now, it just kind of, it was a great part of my life for, you know, a couple years. But the way that it's going right at the moment, actually having a truck was going to be more beneficial to me. So it went to a Ford dealer local to me, and I got into a new leftover 2018 Super Duty with a 6.2 gas in it. Didn't go with the Power Stroke. It wasn't in my budget at the time. So, but getting into something 3/4 ton that can haul, you know, it, good enough for what I need it to do. It was, you know, pretty much a good decision for me in that aspect. And I guess... it just keep me more on track to being able to work on the actual projects I have instead of just acquiring them and letting them sit because I'm too focused on, you know, maybe wanting to spend more money on more expensive mods on the Challenger. Instead of doing that, then, you know, I can put more focus into the cars where they don't take quite as expensive mods or, you know, just normal parts to get them back on the road versus... actually having to spend $5,000 or $6,000 for one single mod.
Now, for any potential new listeners who may not know, as we are going to be getting this platform onto iTunes, probably Riotcast and Stitcher, so for anybody who might have found us, welcome. And you may not know, I have a couple cars, but Nathan has a small fleet. So how many DSMs do you have now?
I think we counted out 5 of them. I think that was... we got the Blazer, Red Talon, Maroon Talon, White Eclipse, and the Red Eclipse. We don't really count the parts car 2G. So, yeah, we're right at 5.
So he's got 3 1Gs and 2 2Gs. I have my 1G, and that's my front-wheel car, my wrong-wheel drive car. And he got the truck, and the Challenger went bye-bye, which ultimately totally back his decisions. That truck's nice as hell. It's quite sharp, and it goes down the road real nice. You know, I can totally back you because I'm looking at trucks myself, obviously, because trying to, you know, you're doing these builds and helping people out, and I'm just trying to haul end tables from IKEA, which doesn't exactly work. Since the last time we podcasted, it's hard to believe it's been that long, but I picked up a 2017 Mirage, which makes me one of like 9 people in the United States who bought a new Mitsubishi product, so I can say I practice what I preach with stupid vehicle buying decisions. So yeah, I do have that. That's been my soul daily since I put the Talon under. And to be fair, for anybody keeping count, the Talon never broke down on me. I didn't put it down because it was really doing anything. It was just for upgrades. The timing belt needed attention, so basic maintenance. But that car was still strong when we put it under. And was getting some of its fuel system tweaks, and yeah, he's got a nice little fleet of DSMs going on. He's got some spare engines, and the funny story of how the white Eclipse got back to us.
Yeah, since we last podcast, I think it was gone at that time.
You had just sold it, yeah.
Sold it off, and it was actually given back.
This time of the, actually, right
this
at
day. Yeah, to this day, it's actually been 1 year to this day right now.
Yeah, because we went and got it back Christmas Eve night. The guy who bought it called Nate and said, hey, you want your car back? It's got to be tonight, though. And there was probably like 16 inches of snow on the ground. We went all the way up to Wadsworth, which shout out to Wadsworth, where I used to live. And yeah, he just gave it back to Nathan, and we drove it back very, very, how can I word this, sketchily, on some extreme performance summer tires through that weather with an exhaust that fell off more times than Michael Jackson's nose. So
yeah, it was very scary.
yeah, that was the night I thought we might have, you know, pushed it a little too far.
It made it back, though, and then ever since, it's kind of just slowly been here and there nitpicking away at little issues that it's had, and I fought a wiring issue for the past, man, since I've owned it, got it running, you know, a little over a year, and just finally actually figured it out last week. Not that I hadn't, you know, it took me that long and I couldn't figure it out. Just I kind of got sidetracked with other people's builds and just kept getting pushed back. And so I actually took the time and pulled the wiring harness off and, you know, went through it, you know, soldered all the connections, made sure everything was okay, made sure there was no chafed wires or anything like that, and actually put it back together, wrapped up some good 3M electrical tape to keep it from, you know, hopefully not chafing through or whatever, but got that all put back together, and it's actually run the best it has ever since I've owned it, as I actually was chasing down, had it narrowed down, I could grab onto the wiring harness and pull it. I'd pull it by hand, and it would change from idling like, you know, a Subaru versus then actually idling the way that it was supposed to. Didn't have a big dead miss in it, and I think it was in the actual cam sensor harness. It was either the cam or the crank harness. So, but just cleaned those up, got rid of some connectors, and just actually hardwired some stuff in to, you know, get rid of some potential problem areas. And it seems to have cleaned it up. So now it's on to little stuff here and there. Needs alignment work. Interior needs cleaned up yet. Just been fighting electrical issues here and there. The day of the shootout.
Yeah, I was getting ready to mention the whole shootout incident. Yeah,
so, I mean, the interior was put together and then had to tear it apart and put it together, tear it apart, put it together, and I just kind of got tired of it. You know, and now that I actually figured out what was going on, I can actually put it back together, hopefully for the last time. You know, but yeah, it's just one of those things that I think some people over the years would have probably given up at this point on this car and just claimed DSM unreliability, you know, to blame, but I don't know. I just stick with it, and I don't see the harm, no harm, no foul, and keeping at something that you like, you know.
Oh, yeah, most sane people would have gave up a while ago. I should say most intelligent people, and nobody should ever listen to anything we say when it comes to car buying and maintaining advice. Right. But with that being said, yeah, I mean, you have basically nothing in the car. I mean, we had the car as a rolling doomsday shell, pieced it together in like 6 hours and did the first drive with it, and I mean, it was all kind of uphill from there, but it went really well, mm-hmm. and yeah, I mean, you sold it for quite a nice profit, ended up getting the car back. Yeah, drove it to the shootout, and
First car I'd driven to the shootout in 10 years, 11 years.
It's just not meant for you to sell it. I mean, we slapped a for sale sign on it at the shootout, a couple biters, but nobody came through.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel like you're destined to have that. Yeah, you are that car's basically like Christine.
Yep, pretty much. It literally, that's why we kind of nicknamed it Christine, because the car, if you're familiar with the movie Christine, the car came back.
Yeah, it did. That was one of the wilder nights I can remember, just going to pick up a car. You know, I've sold a car a time or two where nobody ever came to get it. Just no correspondence. I've never had somebody take possession of the car and say, hey, by the way, you can have this car back. I mean, that's how much that car must have hated that other owner. And by the way, for anybody who hears the background, we totally do not have a dogfighting ring in the background. But, yeah, I love that 2G. And that's... There's quite a bit of DSMs on premises right now. I mean... Our buddy Casey's 2G since the last time you guys probably heard. We had got the motor, the transmission, the T-case, all that back together, and that car moved under its own power. And the old motor was just had a lot of excessive oil consumption, so Nathan had redone the motor in it. That thing's back together. And a pretty longtime friend of ours, and actually my coworker, had Nathan do a quite nice build, you know, an over 500 horsepower reassembly, troubleshoot. So he's done that. I mean, you've had a lot going on over the last year.
Yep, got one right now that's got an FP Black going on it. Sitting in the garage, getting ready to start on that one.
It does. I go out to the garage all the time, and I literally cradle that turbo like it's my newborn child.
Yeah, I've been pretty fortunate, you know, getting some pretty decent clientele and, you know, trusting me on some builds. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I've actually done more building for other people or working on other people's stuff, you know, with decent turbo setups and builds on it versus, you know, my own stuff. It's just kind of one of those things, I guess. I've built more for other people than mine. So it just kind of, but I'm all right with that because I get, you know, satisfaction out of that. I'll get to mine eventually.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of pretty cool stuff that's rolled through, and it is. It's rewarding to work on something and actually, you know, see a car that was a bucket of bolts turn into something that's sitting there idling in the garage. And
you can actually go out and drive it and enjoy it, use it up.
Yeah, and that's been a lot of my motivation. The Talon would have probably been done already, but obviously it did have to kind of take the back seat as I relocated. And I mean, it's been 5 months, and, you know, Christmas has come and went. I've relocated essentially twice. You know, I've had a lot to do, and I've done so much in 5 months. So now it's time, you know, now that Christmas is over, I can actually start focusing on the Talon again. I've got some cams, springs, retainers waiting for it, and it's going to be balls to the wall. Just last winter, that's how it was for the car. Most everything got done then because it was my daily until I bought the Mirage.
Yep. So it'll be the New Year's resolution.
That is my New Year's resolution, to run an 11.999 or faster on a DOT tire this year. You know, nothing too crazy, but
there'll be quite a few interesting front wheel drives out and about. Not that we, you know, prefer the all wheel drive over the front wheel drive much more, but you just don't see that platform going as fast. So it's good to see them out and about. But
oh yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of,
there'll be a lot of them out there.
There's a lot of wicked front wheelers out there. And you know, it is funny, if you look at all the small turbo records, all those cars are front wheel drive. And I think the weight advantage probably has a lot to do with it, and the drivetrain loss advantage. But it's kind of the idea for my car. I mean, it doesn't need 900 horsepower to be fast, because to be fair, the car probably has like 350 now, and it definitely feels extremely good, especially on the highway. So if I add about 200 more to that, it should be pretty lethal, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for.
It'll get there for sure, but I'll be excited to see it, you know, Dustin's car, your car, Bruce's car. I don't mind it'll be anything spectacular, but right there, you know, that's four different front wheel drives just alone out of, you know, our little group that we know.
Oh yeah, we need to revive your Laser for sure, because that thing was kind of the half-ass inspiration of my car.
Yep.
You know, my car encompasses so much of that build you used to have on the Laser, so big part of me wants to see that build come back.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely on the way. I've been, you know, scrolling DSM tuners and watching it kind of revive itself and come back to life, and watching the sporting vendors grow. And it's a good thing, you know. It's, I'd like to offer a little bit more product too if I got the right shop set up and the right tools and equipment. You know, I like to fabricate and build stuff too, so it'll be nice to, you know, support the community if you're in the DSM community, which we are strongly a part of.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Not that we're biased any one way or the other, just it's kind of what we're into. And so it's you know, one of those things that you can pretty much come to us for anything DSM related, and we'll point you one direction or another if we can't do it for you ourselves.
Right, yeah, I mean, there's definitely no bias here. Anybody who knows us knows, you know, Nate and his wife own a Dodge, a Ford, DSMs. In the last, like, year and a half, I've owned a Nissan, an Audi, you know, a DSM, just...
I've owned Audis, BMWs, you know, it's...
Oh, yeah, we've had a massive assortment. We love all cars, but anybody who knows us knows our roots are deeply embedded in the DSM culture, and that's the way it is. And you try to leave it, which I attempted to leave it for a while, and then I relapsed.
I don't think there's ever been, ever since I've turned 16, there hasn't been more than a 6-month span where I haven't had one. And that was when I went on a little vacation for outrunning the cops.
Well, that's me anymore. I mean, this Talon will end up being the longest I've ever owned a car, with the, you know, the Maserati being my number one, you know, the longest I own something. So this black Talon's not going nowhere. You know, my brother busts my balls and, oh, you'll have it 6 months. And, you know, it's been a year and like 4 months now I've had that car. And, yeah, it's not going nowhere.
For a good while, too, ahead of time. So, you know, it's been around for almost 3 years now.
It's the car that ruined my life, because when you brought it home, and as soon as I walked out, even as that car was quite ghetto, like, as Bruce would say if he was here, it looked like it came out of Trotwood. And I still was so kitten smitten with that car. As soon as I walked around it, I think Nate had the car 8 minutes at this house, and I said, if you ever sell it, I want it. And luckily that time came, because I was so happy to buy that car off of you.
It helped me out at the time and gave you a, you know, a project. And I don't know, I just, it's good to see it, you know, stick around too, but get to be used at the same point in time, and watch somebody else be able to put the money into it when, you know, I wasn't exactly capable of it.
It has come a long way. I mean, from the time that car hit the gravel here, and just how rigged, the turbo being held on by one stud, and
the intercooler being on upside down.
Yeah, I still can't wrap my mind around that. Just, that thing was really rigged, and in just a weekend, we had remedied about 80% of it, and it was driving again. And, you know, thing didn't have third gear or second gear, and you just fixed a couple roll pins, and you were daily driving at that point. And
yep,
that same transmission, I flat foot shifted it, clutch dropped it, hit a very good friend with the rearview mirror. I launched it so hard, and that car has never, ever given me one mechanical failure ever. So for anybody who tells you DSMs are not reliable, I'm here to say they're full of shit.
Yep, it's 99% the reliability of the owner.
Yeah, and to be fair, I've put my money where it counts on that car. I've redone every fluid in the drive line, and, you know, I've changed out the old ignition system. I've, you know, now got the new clutch in it, the solid motor mounts. I've put the money where it counts, and that's why I always count on the car. I never really, yeah, the first month I had it, you know, I pretty much, I had to count on it to take me on some pretty far trips because of where life was taking me. And I think I had it a month and I quit really worrying about it. It earned my trust really quick.
Yep.
I put a lot of miles in that car. I mean, a lot. It's been all over the state, and yeah, those are the funnest miles I've ever turned in a car, honestly.
Yep. That's one of those things, kind of like me and, if you have me refer to Dustin, it's my boss, you know, kind of become friends over a little while. You know, I work for a different company, and he kind of was delivering parts and everything, and kind of, I guess, grew a friendship there before he actually became my boss, and then kind of wheeled and dealed in cars and got him back into the DSM game. He just picked up a 2G a couple weeks ago, and, you know, he's kind of jumping back on the train, and he's getting really excited about it, and it's just one of those things we were kind of talking about that's, you know, we're just going to, it's going to be, it's going to have, you know, take a little bit of time, but build your car as a street car and actually enjoy it as a driver, not just completely, you know, gut everything that makes it practical and enjoyable, like keep the AC on it, but still run an FP, you know, a bigger FP turbo at that, and keeping it streetable and be able to drive it, take it on cruises, but yet drive it to the track and not be afraid to go run it and, you know, make sure that it's done right to where you can actually rely on it. And I think it's going to be pretty fun. We're all going to try and get together, get a bunch of DSMs together and go drive around, you know, pick a spot, you know, choose the lake or go visit a, you know, some kind of state monument or something. Just get together on a weekend, go out and not be afraid to show these cars, you know, show people that these cars can be reliable and, you know, they can still make good power and they're not pieces of crap like a lot of people think they are.
No, and you actually, even though the platform is older now and a couple years ago, if you listen to what people tell you, oh, the platform's dead, it's going away. I know at one point, you know, my brother bought into that and, you know, I tried basically telling him it's not the case, and I think he's seeing different now, but
it did slim down there for, it did, you know, a good 5 to probably 8 years. It really seemed like the community thinned out. Even tuners, you know, DSM tuners kind of fell by the wayside there for a while. And just, it was, never went under, but it just seemed like nobody really was, you know, putting any effort into the forum thing anymore. And now you're kind of seeing that come back to life and different guys on, even you see more YouTubers, it seems, that are into the DSM community. And it's kind of like a second wave, I guess. You're seeing more of them come back out to light, and that they all didn't get destroyed for cash for clunkers. And I guess it's just a good thing, in my opinion, you see them coming back out of the woodwork.
I think a lot of the forum game as well is, it just kind of changed with the times. You notice that a lot of forums in general died, even for really popular stuff, and it all kind of went to Facebook group settings. And, you know, cars like the Silvias, the RX-7s, you know, I don't, especially when it comes to Miatas, I don't think that game's ever going to die. But so much of it's Facebook group based now, so the forum thing just became kind of like the, dare I say, flip phone of the day. So everybody's moved to the more streamlined Facebook setting, which is kind of a shame because forums have big advantages, sticky threads, the write-ups, and it's kind of crazy. Some of these new, and I hate to use this term, but millennials, what's a forum? I never heard of DSM tuners. And, you know, back in the day, when you were 16 years old and bored, you just scrolled DSM tuners. And that's what we used to do, or you scrolled RX-7 Club, or whatever.
Yep.
And so much of it's just, it's Facebook-based, and I think that kind of skewed a lot of people. And, yeah, the turnouts at the shootout weren't as good, but then you go to this year's shootout, and some of the turnout wasn't as good, but there were a ton of DSMs there. And you're seeing more build threads every day on, you know, pages like DSM Nation and places like that. Just let you know, the game's definitely not as dead as some people would think it is, because if it was, they wouldn't be doing these frontline fab oil pumps and 3000 GT, you know, rear conversion subframes. You know, with all that going on, it lets you know there's still some serious contenders, and there's
lots of extremely quality fabrication companies, Morrison,
right?
You know, Archer Fab, you know, Bull Fab's still out there. There's a lot of different companies still out there that are making parts for these cars. Volk Metalcraft, and we just put some parts on to Bruce's car from Volk, and, you know, it looks like he has some really high quality stuff.
Yeah, Volk stuff's really good. And even Jeff Bush is doing some of the, like, driveline stuff. And, yeah, you know, obviously Frontline, like you said, Morris and Fab, they do some killer stuff.
Aren't they pretty much the old Shear?
Over Shear. My understanding is, you know, they took over a lot of Shears, you know, like tooling and their jigs, and pretty much took those over and then started making some of their own unique designs. And, you know, they're well known in the community, have a couple really awesome built cars.
Very nice.
Yeah, they're really great people. And, you know, they're designing new stuff all the time. And, you know, you got BS Fab, you know, like a grassroots guy who was kind of pushing the envelope with his own stuff. And then, you know, maybe you in the future. So yeah,
definitely.
I like to see all these grassroots companies, because when, you know, some people in the community try to alienate one another, all in all, it just hurts the platform.
Yep, sure does.
So, you know, you have to embrace the competition if you want this platform. That's why the GTR community is so good, because they're, you know, I hate to sound snooty, but they're a more gentleman class of people, and they can spend money wherever they want it, so they don't really care about the competition, because they can just buy what they want.
Right.
That's why that platform grows. You know, it's, at this point, hard to believe. It's like a 10-year-old platform, and it's already in the sixes.
Right. And it's kind of one of those groups of people, you know, that not anybody can just afford a GTR.
Right.
And not talking crap about DSMs, but, you know, all. Pretty much anybody can afford a DSM, you know, in a project status. You can go out and pick one up for a few hundred dollars and get started, versus a GTR. I don't think you can touch a wrecked one for under 30 grand. So there's a big margin of difference there.
Oh yeah. A whole lot more R&D dollars when you're swinging GTR money, or, you know, you're swinging C7 Corvette money. You know, when you have clientele like that, you can afford the overhead, because the end user product's going to be that much pricier. And
yep.
Thankfully, we're starting to see pricier DSM stuff, like, you know, some of these $1,500 manifolds, these badass $1,000 billet valve covers, and they're producing them, they're selling them, which tells me the market's there.
Yep, sure is.
Which is good. And you do still see some people that are older still doing the DSM thing. Yeah. I mean,
and what you're seeing that I've, you know, recognized, the guys that got out of the DSM game and went to the Evos when they were, you know, a lot more popular, they're kind of going back to their roots and going out of Evos. You know, they're at their 10, 15-year mark, and they're kind of old news now, and the DSMs are kind of becoming the in thing again. So it kind of comes and goes in waves, and right now I think they're definitely – the DSM is in an upswing right now, so it's a good time.
Oh yeah, you're seeing a huge influx of these 80s and 90s cars, and people our age embracing them, people who couldn't buy them when they were new because of age constraints, and, you know, these really big car shows that are dedicated just to these types of cars, like Radwood, for example. You know, it's dedicated to all these cool 80s and 90s cars, and the DSM just happens to be one of the coolest of those cars. Because without cars like these DSMs, the older Audis, and, you know, dare I even say, like, the Probe GT Turbo first gen.
Any of the hot hatch, like the GLH Omnis, the, you know, any of those sweet, the GTIs, they all set off the revolution in the U.S.
Yeah, and the DSM just happens to be daddy to all those cars.
Yep.
As it has been for the longest time, and the envelope gets pushed more and more every year. I mean, Boostin just went like 703 this year, and you're seeing guys like Aaron Gregory, who just made some huge changes, billet block when he was pushing his iron block to the 750s. So every year, everybody's like, I don't think it'll get better, but statistically, every year they get proven wrong.
Yep.
I know this year we'll, in 2019, we'll probably see that 6 second all-wheel drive pass out of a DSM with a manual transmission, and that's
that's huge.
Had you told us that 10 years ago, we'd have been like, what, eighth?
Right.
You know, it's come that far in that short amount of time. So, specifically speaking about, like, the DSM platform, yeah, it's still very much in, and still big here in Ohio, and, you know, if you don't believe it, when the weather ain't crap, go to a shootout, and it can be quite a thing for somebody who's never seen it to see it. And then you find your life being ruined and bankruptcies and
what I can tell you that I was definitely impressed with this year at the shootout was the amount of guys that were actually doing the, you know, like swap meet stuff.
Yes.
I remember years ago where I was one of maybe three guys up there that hauled a truckload and a trailer full of parts up there. Now there was guys up there that, you know, they had just swap meet parts more. They had more swap meet parts there than I probably ever owned.
They did. It was outstanding. I mean, I grabbed my center taillight finally, some head studs.
And not only that, it was, you could choose from, you know, a dozen of different ones that you wanted. So
it was fantastic.
It's not like, you know, just your guy that just had it hanging in on his wall in his garage and just showed up and by chance. It was, no, there's plenty of parts. You know, if you're in the game for sourcing what stock parts work, you know, you're utilizing the good OEM stock parts versus buying full aftermarket stuff. There's plenty of parts you can buy there and refurbish, you know. 1G throttle bodies, I think they were pulling a premium.
They were.
Like $175 or something like that for a good, you know, non-turbo 1G throttle body. And I mean, which is good because it's going to keep them out of the hands of the guys that just buy them and, you know, sit on them again to resell them. It's the guys that are actually looking for them that are going to use them. You know, paying a premium for parts isn't always a bad thing. It's, in my opinion, it's a good thing at times.
No, I fully agree, and, you know, I don't want to sound like that crotchety old guy, but at the same time, you know, the last thing you want for a platform is for a 16-year-old with a McDonald's job to go out and buy this car, and, you know, he goes to Sloppy Mechanics, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I do want to twist the knob off my boost controller and go gap 5.3s, you know? The next thing you know, this car's being parted out, and everybody in his neighborhood thinks these cars are raging shit, and that is what legitimately happened to this platform for quite a long time. So putting it out of reach a little bit
it's a good thing.
Yes, it is. For that demographic, yes. Because not only that, these cars can be fast, easy. A front-wheel drive, you know, DSM with a couple mods should not be in the hands of a new driver.
Right.
Without a doubt.
I mean, literally, just watching Dustin, his build that he's putting together, you know, he's not going out and buying brand new stuff. He's sourced everything, you know, from part outs or, you know, people that are upgrading their setups and getting used parts, used quality name brand parts, you know, and putting together a setup that I don't doubt this car is going to see the 12s easy, pretty much full bolt on. You know, it's a black box car. He literally is buying, you know, he bought the Evo scan, he bought whatever the cable is that they use, not the Tactrix cable, but the,
I know
there's another
about
cable there out there. I'm drawing a blank at the moment, but anyways, I mean, literally he's using the stock ECU, using that program, the ECU flash program with, you know, Evo scan, and literally upgraded fuel pump, injectors, turbo, and exhaust. And I don't see this car, you know, on a good tire going anything less than a high 12. You know, I mean, it's gonna break some hearts. So, and that's literally just buying the car for a very, very small amount that he has in it. It's actually an extremely good deal. Sourcing and being smart about parts. And I can tell you he's gonna be well under $4,000 in this build.
And
I don't even want to say maybe not even half that, you know. Granted, he's gonna have his time and his own time and figuring out how to run this computer program, but I wanna say that it's gonna be extremely quick and stay reliable, you know, for the most part, and it's gonna be a fun ride for him.
I mean, if we're fair, you're 2G, not counting what you sold it for and recapped it, because if that's the case, you're in the green, like,
right,
$1,200. But I would say, you know, erasing that, you have maybe $1,100 in your 2G, if that, because a lot of it was old stuff you had laying around. So I'd probably say it was more like $900. if you invested 1,500 hours in a fuel system, a decent clutch and a turbo, you could put that car in the 12s on the tires it's sitting on.
Right.
Just goes
the
to show
trans
you.
That was, you know, the input shaft, if you're familiar with the DSM trans, there's a piece that the throw-out bearing slides back and forth on. It's cast aluminum, cast into the front half of the transmission case. That was actually snapped off, so I had to re-weld that back onto the case, the transmission case, and, you know, it was still running on that same thing. You know, it hasn't given me any issues. It's literally just resourcing used parts and making what I had work.
Yeah, I mean, that car has been all about that. There was so much that was wrong with that. And for anybody who doesn't know, it had some shock tower damage. And it was really the first time I got to see it firsthand. But you actually repaired the shock towers by using donor shock towers. And it actually looks really good.
Right. And it wasn't rust either. Like you normally see these rust out. It was actually, I don't know if it was from accident damage or we have reason to speculate that the car maybe at one point in time had, like, air shocks or some kind of hydraulic setup on it.
Yeah, so there was the mounting bracket in the hatch, and, you know, just to kind of paint the picture for anybody who doesn't know, and it's my favorite part of the entire car.
I already know where this is going.
There's a actually extremely handcrafted laser-etched rosary just etched into the back quarter glass of the praying hands, like, holding, you know, the like, Messiah cross. And it's prismatic when it hits different lights, so I can imagine somebody threw money into this etching. It's kind of ridiculous. So, yeah, you know, when you mix that with the fact the car had a Terminator 2 wing straight out of a J.C. Whitney catalog, and
still has the zebra headliner.
It does indeed have a zebra headliner.
Velvet.
And I'm pretty sure when the car arrived, I definitely got, like, a bit of, like, a contact high just sitting in the car. So, yeah, to think this car had hydrails on it, not exactly a far-fetched thing to think.
Right.
And there's a lot more that we found in this car, but we'll leave that right there. The little rosary in the back window tells the story. It gives you an idea of what this car's seen. And if it could talk, it would probably have its own reality show. So
it's extremely impressive that this thing is back on the road. And, you know, I drove it to work back and forth twice last week. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's not exactly unreliable in my book.
No, without us, that car would have unfortunately turned into a silver bullet beer can, which I'm glad that did not happen. But that's what that car was truly destined for. At first, and I'm a DSM guy all the way, like, when it comes right down to it, I am the biggest DSM conservationist, but even I, at one point, thought that this might be a little too ambitious.
Yeah,
I thought maybe we bit off more than we could chew.
Literally, I think I may have even talked about this in a previous podcast. I was literally ashamed of the way that this car looked. So I literally only have one picture of this car when I first got it. It was just that bad. But I did, you know, you look through all that and you realize that it's a solid shell to start with. And, you know, you assess the situation with what parts you have laying around and what you can get cheaply. And, you know, that's what kind of kept me motivated on it to put it back together.
That thing has come a long way. And that's just, you know, one of your projects. But that one kind of was the highlight of the year. You know, much like my Talon was for me, that car, when you had it up and going, even when you had the Scat Pack, you know, a 485 horsepower, you know, 6-speed barge of a, you know, muscle boat, speed boat.
Yeah.
You know, you were driving the DSM a lot.
Yeah.
You were actually putting the miles on it, and this goes to show you, you know, you can have fun at any price point if you really enjoy the platform you have.
Exactly.
It's the beauty of the automotive hobby. You don't have to spend $50,000 to have fun. You can buy a $1,200 Craigslist Miata that maybe is going to rust out in 2 years, but you can still have fun with it.
Right. That's exactly how I am. You know, I see different vehicles driving by, you know. I don't necessarily look at them like they're a piece of crap, I look at them as, you know, automotive potential. Even if they're a normal plain Jane car, you know, it's kind of one of the ideas that I toss around in my head if I ever, you know, build my YouTube channel the way that I want and I'm able to mess with cars, you know, to do more of a vlog style, you know, YouTube channel. I've got an idea called, in my own head, you know, like normal car nonsense. Like, any kind of, like, you know how we were going to do with the Taurus and the, what was the other car?
The Neon.
Oh, the Neon, yeah, the Taurus and the Neon. You know, it's just like, buy normal cars for a few $100s and, you know, basically, I guess, relive coming right out of high school or maybe being in high school and only being able to afford a few $100 car and, you know, do the cheap free mods or, you know, make them cool for what they were or, you know, cooler. Not necessarily it's going to be a cool car in the end, but just something that's not a normal run-of-the-mill grandma car or, you know, just an average daily driver. You make it your own.
No, I fully agree. I mean, there's no reason the Neon is not a cool car. Fight me.
Right.
Because the RT existed, which instantly makes any Neon cool.
Yep.
Especially with a couple of mods or, you know, just because you have a Contour doesn't mean you're uncool because the SVT did exist. Right,
exactly. Kind of a bridge the gap between the more unobtainium or the unicorn version of that car, you know, take, I guess, ideas that they did to make the car cool, but kind of put your own twist on it and just, you know, do that. And then in the end, sell the car off and start over again. Let somebody else enjoy what you built, you know, move on from there. It'd be a great idea, in my opinion, just to, you know.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, if they were doing it back then and they kind of thought the market might enjoy these, you know, more hopped up versions of a mundane car, then.
Exactly.
I've always been about that. I mean, I've had multiple B13 Sentras, and everybody's like, man, why are you driving such a shit box? And it's like, I love this car because if somebody accidentally hits it with a shopping cart, I'm not going to lose my mind.
Right.
But at the same time, it's still fun to drive it. It doesn't take away from the fact that it's a lightweight car.
And it's not too niche where nobody supports it because there's companies that support them still.
They do. And that you can say that about the, I forget what generation it is, but like the 90 to 94 Honda Accords like my brother used to have. Most people might see that as a, you know, a hoopty, but
in this day and age, it's an old car to, you know, the kids that are coming out of high school these days. You know, a 94 to a kid that's graduating this year or next year, you know, that car was out 6 years before they was even born.
Right, that's an old car.
And sorry about the grammar, before they were born, not was.
Oh, yeah, we don't try to be too professional here, not even a little bit.
I try to catch myself, though, because it drives me nuts when I type out a message and spell correct, you know, and miss an A instead of an AN.
You're on this podcast, we're all about, you know, having fun, so we never worry too much. We like to, you know, bust each other's balls a little bit, but, you know, kind of like I was saying about the Accord, that might be an old hoopty to somebody, but when you're an enthusiast like me and Nathan, and you make every bad life decision possible and fall into a depressed state, you take solace and smile and knowing that, oh, that car does have, you know, F22 in it. Exactly. So I could take the spare DSM parts and, you know, flip this manifold upside down and throw about a 60 millimeter ching chong on it and, you know, your eBay turbo and just have a great time with it. That's what's fun about our hobby. It does take money to do this hobby. You know, this isn't a broke person's hobby per se, but you can start off as
resourceful.
You can start off as a broke person. And for anybody who doesn't believe this, just go to the Sloppy Mechanics page. There's guys building turbo headers out of drive shafts. And you can have a lot of fun on a budget. And you can even add your own personal touches. That's a big, I think, part of the reason we like DSMs. to build one to the level I want it, you know, yeah, it's going to take some money, but it really doesn't take much money to throw in these cars in the 12s. For what it would cost you to take a vacation for two to Mexico, you could buy a DSM and take a vacation for two to, you know, air quotes, Mexico, right, and go gap your buddy's GTO.
The better Mexico.
Exactly. Mexico is wherever you want to be on a Saturday night, and a DSM is a good place to be on those kind of nights. Or, you know, whatever else you're into. We certainly don't bash Hondas here, because one of the few cars that gapped me was a Honda. I got destroyed by a Honda in my town, and it's another, you know, car I enjoy. I would like to build a Honda hatch someday. You know, if we're talking future planes, it's in my future to do one sometime.
Yep, for sure. I know I've always wanted to do one the way that I've always wanted.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want an EG hatch with a K-Series in it? Because if you don't, then I don't know. You have no pulse. That's like an almost real-life cheat code. Because with a couple mods, those things are blazingly fast.
Yep. Yeah, you're in the day and age, too, where I guess you don't really understand where you can throw a few things at these, lighten them up, K-swap it for, you know, $1,500, and you're going to have a car that's going to destroy about anything from a roll.
Yes, and everybody knows about LS swaps. That goes without saying. That's the running joke. Take any, as they say, 80 shit box, like an old rusted out G-body or an old Caprice or even an old Dodge Diplomat, which is something I think would be really cool, but you throw an LS in it, you throw a $400 VS racing turbo on it, you decap your stock injectors, and you just let it eat, and that is enough to probably get most people killed.
Yep.
But you can do that with Hondas, too. Yeah, you take an engine out of an RSX, you throw a couple bolt-ons on it, you can use eBay parts, I don't judge, and that's enough to go very quick from a roll, just like you said. So no matter what you're into, V8s, imports, there's something for everybody.
Yep.
Which,
yeah, there's a lot of roll race bashers, though, it seems like, out there. It's not the real racing, but if that were the instance, my one and only rebuttal is, if roll racing wasn't a cool thing, TX2K wouldn't be a thing.
If roll racing wasn't a cool thing, shift sector wouldn't be a thing, TX2K. And, you know, I guess I hate to be that guy, but yeah, you could say dig racing's for people who know how to set up a chassis, which is true.
Yeah, very true.
But at the same time, not all chassis can be set up. It's very hard to set up a, let's say, a torsion beam front-wheel drive style setup car. And I like to rebuttal with, well, if you think roll racing's stupid, then you didn't bring enough car. And that's just my rebuttal. If that's the case, either you didn't bring enough car, you didn't bring enough cash, or you built the wrong platform.
Yeah.
So if you have a car that maybe traps 145 in the quarter, honestly, and that doesn't really do shit in roll racing, when these Lambos are trapping 145 within 330 feet.
Right.
So, I don't know. In my opinion, I just, there's some for everybody.
Exactly.
Not everybody. You might have a car that can trap 235 mile an hour in a roll, but can't trap 140 in the quarter.
Yep.
It's different strokes for different folks, but that's why cars like Lambos do exist. Those guys live for that, and
that's where the real money is.
It is, without a doubt. If it wasn't, underground racing would have never gotten where he's at.
Yep. Lamborghinis, you know, the Audi R8s, anything, the Supras. We all know that Supras are few and far in between on good drag setups.
They are.
You know, they're out there, but they're harder to set up. But they're good at roll racing, so a lot of guys roll race them.
That's the other thing. I love drag racing to death. I go to the shootout every year, and
absolutely,
I love it. But at the same time, you can get the same thrill without completely destroying your driveline. So that's why roll racing's nice. If you have a car that has a $5,800 transmission, instead of, you know, getting in a dick measuring contest, you can you put it into roller racing and you're going to probably break a lot less things.
No matter what, you're always going to be slower than somebody in drag racing.
Yeah, and you can't please everybody either, because you might be into drag racing and then you get a roll race call out and
yep,
it goes either way.
Then you just tell them that it's not real racing.
Exactly. That's always the rebuttal. If you don't agree with it, you just bash it. That's you know, the current day and age way.
Yep.
I know good and well my car is never going to be a great dig car. I'm completely comfortable with it. I might get it to hook a little bit, but I really don't care if it digs that well. If it runs an 11.99 in the quarter on a track, but I can gap a 10.30 car on the street from a roll, I don't care. That's all I care about.
Yep.
And that's why when people bash Hellcats, I think it's funny. Well, ran one at the track. Well, what's you doing on the highway? That's what I want to see. It's usually my rebuttal.
Yeah.
Because there's been plenty of guys who've tested that theory and then got, you know, got taken to Gapplebee's with, you know, a couple Gappletizers right on the highway with the same car they beat at the track.
Right.
So, that you know, I guess that rolls into 2018 as well. That was quite a big debate everywhere in 2018 is, you know, is real racing racing? Yeah, it's about a, you know, multi-million dollar thing to do. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say yes.
Yep. Mile racing, standing mile even, you know, rolling mile.
I'd venture to say it's hotter right now. I mean, look how many local drag tracks are being closed down throughout the country right now. Tons of them, unfortunately, are being shut down. And I never really heard of shift sector closing down locations because there's airports all around you.
Mm-hmm.
Makes perfect roll race event locations.
Yep. And I don't know. Like I say, TX2K, it wouldn't be what it is today if roll racing wasn't cool. You know, if it wasn't real racing.
Absolutely not.
It's an entire event for it. Granted, there's way more events for just drag racing, but there's way more events for IndyCar racing, you know, NASCAR, you know, say what you want about it, but, I mean, it's more than just going straight.
You can say that about anything, because if you're big into autocross at Rizubeca, yep, that's not real track racing.
Right.
Well, some of the track racing you do that's amateur, if you don't have a full cage and a fucking GID system and you're peeing yourself in your race suit, that's not real racing either.
Right.
And no matter what, you can't make everybody happy.
Right. Because
if you could, I don't know, we'd all be rich and be driving Ferrari Challenge Stradalis.
Yep. Wouldn't be good enough for some people, though, I can tell you that.
No, I can completely agree with that, you know.
But yeah, it's definitely there. It's one of those things that you could, you know, see both sides of the fence if you're in our shoes like us. We can appreciate all kinds of stuff, you know. Not necessarily, I don't think, because I was brought up more into the drag racing, you know, growing up, and that's what was cool, the muscle cars. But I don't know, as an automotive enthusiast, I appreciate all kinds of, you know, automotive sports, whether, you know, I may not be into one versus the other, you know, so much like F1 or IndyCar.
Right.
You know, I may not quite be into that versus Le Mans or a road course race or, you know, grudge racing and, you know, drag races, stuff like that, roll racing. You know, I prefer some stuff over the other, but I can appreciate everything.
Same here. I mean, I like all kinds of racing, and shoot, I remember even going to like some of those tractor pull things with you when I was younger. It's not really my scene, but
it still revolves around engines with huge turbos strapped to them making hundreds of pounds of boost. So
that's all I care about. If I'm gonna see a couple explosions and I'm gonna hear choo-choo noises, then honestly I'm cool with it. Exactly. It doesn't matter what it is. I mean, I've went down the rabbit hole before, you know, waiting in my truck, you know, to do my job, where I've literally seen people like slaloming Renault semis, you know, tractors.
Yeah.
It's like, this is kind of rad. Yeah, I can get behind this. It's somebody racing against the clock in a vehicle with more than one wheel, then I'm interested in it.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Yep.
If it's a fat guy like myself trying to unicycle around a cone, I'm probably not into it. But
right.
If it's a contest of speed involving vehicles, then I think we should all appreciate it,
matter
what it is.
Right. And that's why, you know, in my opinion, we have a very unique sense of automobile,
Yes, I agree.
It's just one of those things where no matter where we go or who we talk to, there's always people that are so biased, they're closed-minded. So that's we try and reach out and, you know, let people understand, you know, where you can be more open. You don't have to be so a one-sided to one kind of racing or one brand of automobile. It's, you know, it's a great wide open world out there of all kinds of awesome stuff.
I agree. And for